Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast, indeed. I'm Jamie here with John. What's up, man?
Hey, man. You doing all right?
Doing okay. I'm trying to prepare myself. We had several weeks in a row of serial killers. Last week, we talked about Action Park, which was a little more lighthearted until the end there when we got to the gruesome parts and the tragedies. But today's going to be tough for me.
Yeah, this is not good. This is tough even for me, and I've seen a lot of crap in my profession.
This comes to us from Karina, who joined the $20 tier over on Patreon and got to select this case. And she actually mentioned in her note here, let's see, Jamie will have a hard time with this case. She's well aware of my insecurities. Spot on.
She was right, and I think you are going to have – I mean, we're both going to have a hard time with this one. This is rough.
Yeah, my research was halted on a couple of occasions where I just needed to take a break.
Yeah. People have asked this before. Are there any times where you start researching something and then just stop? And we both did that on this one.
Yeah. So warning, it's going to be some graphic stuff. There's going to be some things that are hard to hear about violence against kids. So there you go. I got a couple people I want to thank for doing 5-star reviews over on Apple Podcasts. This comes from Lori and Jax. Says, love listening to Jamie and John. You both do your homework, and I appreciate your perspectives. Keep doing what you do. All the best from Lori Grassi. This one comes from Cammy Higg, 2011. Love this podcast. I really enjoy this podcast and hosts. They seem like very kind and smart men. I like that they don't always agree on things, but they're respectful of each other's opinions. Keep it up. So thank you very much, Cammy and Lori, for those reviews. Also a great way to recommend cases. If you do, please don't recommend cases where there's violence against kids. I struggle with that. But regardless, today is a fascinating episode, and I am glad Karina brought this up to us. It's one I had not heard about, and it's different in a lot of ways. It is tough to hear, but it's a good and important story to be told.
Yep. Guys, don't forget, you can also find us on Patreon. If you've already listened to everything that we have on our main feed, you can go over to Patreon, pay as little as $3 a month, and you get bonus episodes each and every month. You get early ad-free content as well. And like Karina, you can pay a little extra and pick a case for us to cover. So take advantage of that.
All right, John, without further ado, would you please go ahead and get us rolling?
Yeah, man, let's go back to the 90s. These were happy days for me, but for the families we're going to talk about today, it was a nightmare. On July 29th, 1995, 13-year-old Thad Phillips. Thad is an unusual name, but I have a brother-in-law named Thad.
Yeah.
It's short for Thaddeus.
Yep.
But Thad Phillips and his sister fell asleep on their couch in their new home in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Now, around 4 a.m., Thad's father noticed that he was missing, and he was nowhere in this house. Now, there didn't appear to be any signs of a struggle, but Thad's parents insisted their son would not leave the house without telling them. And his parents were right. Thad remembers falling asleep on the couch, but when someone picked him up off the couch, he assumed that it was one of his parents carrying him to his bedroom. So, a couple of things here, I guess. What I've said so far infers that something bad's about to happen to Thad, but that he is also able to survive to recall all these details, right?
Right.
So he woke up disoriented, and he was outside. And with him, there was an older teenage boy that he did not recognize. So far, we have Thad asleep on a couch. Another teenage boy seems to have come into his house, picked him up, and carried him outside. Now, Thad recalls that the boy seemed friendly enough, and he asked Thad to come to his house with him. And Thad said that he was groggy and confused, so he simply agreed to go back to the boy's home with him that the boy claimed he shared with his older brother.
When the boys got to the home, which was really just a shack, the teenage boy told Thad that his name was Joe. He was, in fact, 17-year-old Joe Clark, and he told Thad that he was going to be throwing a party. He told Thad the names of some other kids that were going to come over and that the boys knew Thad from school. So he was telling them that some of your friends are coming over. We're going to have a good time. And while they were waiting on these alleged other guests, Joe suggested that they go upstairs to check out some model cars.
How wild is this? Like, you're picked up by a random teenager off your couch when you're asleep, and now you're in his house looking at model cars. Like, what the crap's going on
here? It probably felt like a dream at this point. He was already groggy, and I'm sure it felt almost like it wasn't reality, but unfortunately it was. Thad was excited to see these cars, so they went up to Joe's bedroom, and when they got there, Joe threw Thad down on the bed, grabbed one of his feet, and viciously twisted it until his ankle snapped. Now, Thad seems to not really acknowledge the pain at this point. He's scared to death, doesn't know what's happening, so he managed to get free from Joe and limp his way on his broken leg downstairs. But of course, he wasn't very fast. Joe was able to catch up to Thad, threw him down on the couch, and just started beating him, started punching him as hard as he could. Now Joe's angry, so he proceeded to push Thad's leg up toward the boy's head and leaned on it right underneath his thigh until his leg snapped again.
So now he has a broken ankle and a broken, like, femur almost. Yeah. I mean, the femur is the hardest bone in your body to break.
And
the most painful, apparently.
Absolutely. And then after his leg was broken, Thad was just laying there helpless, and Joe jumped up and down on Thad's chest trying to suffocate him.
Now, this torture and beating would go on for hours. And of course, Thad is conscious for all this, so he's going to be screaming, but he would say that his screams would be muffled by a towel. And between beatings, Thad said that Joe would pretend to be his friend. He tended to Thad's broken bones. He would carry him downstairs to watch movies. Now, Joe would talk to him as if nothing was wrong. Jamie, like, how bewildering. Like, I cannot imagine being in Thad's shoes, and this is just a whirlwind of crap and awfulness, and now this guy's pretending, like, one minute he's breaking your femur, the next minute you're talking and hanging out like your buddies.
Reminds me of one of those horror movies where somebody just changes personalities, like the movie Split. He just flips a switch and becomes a completely different person, and that's what Thad is seeing here. And like that, I wouldn't know how to react to this. This is just so bizarre and scary.
At some point, Joe started opening up to this kid, Thad. He told him about his family. Joe told him about his car, his girlfriend, and how he lived in that house with his brother. And Thad eventually mustered up the courage to ask Joe why he was doing this to him. And Joe simply replied that he liked it, that he enjoyed the sound of breaking bones and the way it felt to snap in his hands.
That's just so uncomfortable for me to hear. Whenever I see a sports injury, I'm not the guy that rewatches it to see how the ankle turned. I'm the guy that gets nauseous and has to look away. But it seems that this is something that Joe has experienced before and really enjoys.
This is weird, but like when I do see a tragic sports injury, it makes me feel like I can't explain the feeling, but it's like I have a physical response and I have to look away. Like I don't want to see that.
And here Joe is acting like he's popping like the bubbles in mailing packaging.
Yeah.
So Thad's torture was severe, obviously. Joe used it as a way to manage his daily frustrations. He took it all out on Thad. At one point, Joe's car wouldn't start, so he came back in and broke the other one of Thad's legs and eventually broke both kneecaps as well. Now, when Thad did have the strength to fight back, he would try to get away and try to get Joe off of him, but that just made Joe mad and the torture got worse. Joe pushed a pillow over Thad's face to try to suffocate him at one point, but Joe underestimated how strong that Thad was. At one point, Thad tried his first genuine escape. It was when Joe had left him alone locked in a closet, but Thad was able to get out of the closet, drag himself down the stairs, get to the kitchen, and just before he got out of the house, Joe showed back up with his girlfriend. Now, Joe and his girlfriend didn't hear Thad in the next room, since Thad had passed out a few times from the pain from moving around on two broken legs. And then when Joe's girlfriend finally left, Joe found Thad laying on the kitchen floor. And needless to say, he punished him for this. He dragged him back up the stairs and beat him brutally, threatening to kill Thad for trying to escape.
Thad is tough, man. I mean, this is happening over the course of 48 hours. So the next time Joe left Thad alone, 13-year-old Thad had been held for 48 hours. And on the evening of July 30th, 1995, Thad used an old heavy guitar that was in the closet that he was locked in, and he used that guitar to break down the door where Joe had locked him up. And at this point, he was severely dehydrated. His legs were completely useless. I mean, he's broken major bones in both legs and both kneecaps are gone, right? So Thad threw himself down the stairs. And after he did that, he actually passed out a couple of times because the pain was unbearable and just how fatigued and dehydrated he was. But when he would wake up, Jamie, he was able to make it to the kitchen. And there he managed to shake the cord on the phone until the receiver fell to the floor. I realize that's not a very common thing in most houses. So if you're a younger listener, you may not understand what I'm talking about. But phones used to hang on walls in kitchens, and they had a cord coming from the bottom of it. And when you picked up the phone, it had buttons on it that you could use to call.
Man, how lucky was Thad that this was a phone where the buttons were on the receiver and not on the base?
Sometimes they were on the base.
I don't know if he could have gotten up to get to those. So very fortunate this was the right kind of phone.
So he was able to get the phone down and called 911, and he stayed on the line long enough for police to trace the call because, again, he was carried there in the dark. He had no idea where this was at.
No clue where he was. And again, another fortunate piece there was that they were able to figure out where the call was coming from. And we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about what happened after Thad was rescued and how Joe was brought to justice. So after Thad had called 911 from Joe's shack of a house, police came and rescued him. He was rushed to the hospital because at the time of his rescue, he was in very bad condition. I know you think of broken legs as just being physical wounds, but we're setting up infections. He's dehydrated. This is a quote that said that his twisted feet had skin reminiscent of rubber and his toes were pointing in the wrong direction. His thigh, which was his femur, like you mentioned, had snapped. His ribs were bruised and broken, and his arms had been bent and twisted. Usually when we talk about mutilated bodies, it has something to do with a stabbing or something, John, but this was just physical aggression, blunt force, twisting and turning. His legs were broken in four places, and he had serious, life-threatening internal bleeding from these broken bones. When those bones are broken inside, they can sever arteries and veins. Doctor said that he was just a few hours away from dying due to these injuries. He had to have several surgeries over the next several years to recover.
Could you imagine being the parents of this poor kid? I mean, I guess in my mind, if you're gone, if my 13, 14 year old disappeared for 48 hours, I'm probably assuming worst case scenario, he's not going to make it. And so I guess on one hand, you're thankful that you have your boy alive, but to see him in this shape, man, I mean, it just tears my stomach up thinking about what they saw and what this kid had to go through.
And to know that somebody did this to him, this wasn't a scenario where he like fell off a cliff or down a hill and got these injuries. Somebody did this to their little boy.
Each bone was broken like intently and purposely, not just, and by using, like, it wasn't like he got hit with a baseball bat. I mean, it was, some kid took their hands and broke this kid's bones. So that's insane.
Yeah, it's really crazy to think about. That's so much tougher than I could ever be, to be able to survive that, to get out of there. And on the way to the hospital, he also told them not only that Joe was the person who had done this to him, and now they knew where Joe lived, but he wasn't the first victim of Joe. Joe had told him that he had done this to other boys, including a boy named Chris Steiner.
All right, a little bit about Chris. So this would be a year before Thad's kidnapping, July 4th, 1994. That's when 14-year-old Chris Steiner went missing from his bedroom. When his parents went to wake him up for his new job at 6:15 in the morning, Chris was nowhere to be found. Jamie, he was going to be working at McDonald's, and he had recently started that job, so he went to bed and thought he was going to be waking up to that. Now, Chris's father told police that he last checked on his son the night before at about 10 p.m. When the property was searched, investigators noticed a ground floor bedroom, which was where Chris's older brother's room was. There was a window that had a screen that had been cut in that room. And there were muddy footprints found throughout the house, and on the ground floor patio doors were unlocked. Now, at first, everyone agreed that Chris likely went out with his friends or a girl, since he was, you know, it was the 4th of July weekend. So he was, by all appearances, his parents said he was a great kid, never gave him any trouble, but then he had just recently started this job. So at this job, there could be other teenagers that he was getting to know, and 14 years old, you're probably not going to tell your parents everything that you're doing. And, you know, that's kind of the time when you get into a little bit of trouble, even if you are generally a good kid.
And as a parent there, I know you're certainly worried. You're also frustrated that this has happened if you assume that this was voluntary on your child's behalf. But it wasn't long till they found out that wasn't the case. A few days later, July 10th of 1994, a body was found in the Wisconsin River. Dental records were able to confirm that this was the body of 14-year-old Chris Steiner.
So could you imagine, I'm sorry, going back to this, but like these parents for days had to wonder what was going on with their kid. And one day they get a knock at the door by police and they don't say, hey, we found your kid. They just say, hey, we need to grab dental records from you. And we found a body in a river. And so could you imagine the agonizing moments between handing over those records to getting the call that this was indeed your son?
Like, yeah, that's the
agony. I mean, you're pins and needles anyway, but then knowing that there's a good chance your child has been found dead.
Yeah, it's just torturous. Not only, I mean, the kids are obviously being tortured physically, but the families are being tortured psychologically and emotionally as well. Chris's body was badly decomposed and bloated from being in the water for several days. The cause of death after an autopsy was listed as drowning, and the manner was undetermined. The manner being, was it accident, homicide, suicide, was listed as undetermined so that an investigation could take place.
When police were able to speak with Thad Phillips about everything, they knew they were looking for a young man named Joe Clark, and he was now being known as the Bone Breaker Killer. They didn't know where to find him. They checked a few teen parties, but ultimately held a stakeout at Joe's home. He was apprehended about 4 hours after Thad was able to call 911. They searched Joe Clark's home, and they found something truly disturbing. In Joe Clark's bedroom was a notebook, and there were lists in it in Joe's handwriting. And the lists were headed with get to now, can wait, and leg thing. These lists contained 29 names of local boys, and some of these guys were actually known to Thad.
This is, we've talked about Nathaniel Barjona and his kid cookbook. We found other killers who keep trophies or keep lists. This continues to get more and more stomach churning for me. Thankfully, Joe was caught at this point and eventually charged with attempted first-degree intentional homicide, causing great bodily harm to a child, mayhem, and causing mental harm to a child. Joe would plead no contest and not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. He admitted that he took Thad, but insisted that he had good intentions, that he just wanted to hang out and he just wanted to make a friend. Joe claimed to have no recollection of what happened. He claimed to not know how Thad got his injuries. He stated that he, and this is direct quote, kind of blacked out when the injuries happened. The defense argued that his biological mother, which Joe was adopted, they said his bio mom had been a very heavy drug user throughout her pregnancy, and Joe had a previous head injury from a bike crash that happened about a year earlier. So they were saying that due to that drug abuse in the womb and a head injury, that he was not able to recognize that what he was doing was wrong.
So thankful that Thad survived this. I can't imagine the mental toll that this has had to have taken on his life. And I don't know that you'll ever fully recover from that, but because he was alive and was able to provide this eyewitness testimony, Joe Clark was found guilty and sentenced to 100 years for what he did to Thad. He was also ordered to pay Thad $31,566 in medical damages, $6 million in compensatory damages, and $15 million in punitive damages. Now, to this day, Clark has paid zero money to Thad, and Thad's friends have even had to start a GoFundMe recently to help Thad with his medical costs. But he has had enough surgeries in his life that they are able to get him walking again. After Thad's tip that Joe mentioned Chris Steiner, this case was reopened. They exhumed Chris's body and performed a post-mortem exam, and it turns out that Chris Steiner had injuries on his legs and ankles that were identical to Thad's. Jamie, I know that originally they said the cause of death was drowning, but am I way off base to think that, like, you wouldn't have noticed your legs being broken or the ankle being broken in an exam by the coroner at that time?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. I think to determine the cause of death, they basically, if they find you in water, they look to see if there's water in your lungs. If you die in a house fire, they look to see if there's smoke in your lungs to see if you died before the fire or before you went in the water or after. And I'm assuming they found water in his lungs.
Yeah.
And I don't know, at that point, do you say, yeah, we see all these other injuries, but
maybe that led to the drowning. Maybe you broke your leg and ankle and then you fell in a river and died.
Oh yeah. I mean, I assume that's what happened. I assume he did throw him in the river and he couldn't swim
no, I'm saying, like, you see these legs that or the leg that's broken. Do you assume your broken leg caused you to then fall into a river?
He was already bloated and he had been in the water for several days. I think there are a lot of things that, like, while he was in there, he could have been hit by a boat or pulled under a rock. Like, a lot of different things could have caused his injury. So I think at that point that they weren't sure foul play was involved, but they left it undetermined to leave it open. But no, you're right. I think that maybe further investigation should have happened when the body was found.
Yeah. And like you said, we know he was alive when he was thrown into the river because there was water in his lungs, and they found that he had died of drowning. And his injuries would have made it impossible or very likely impossible for him to have been able to swim and save himself. Joe Clark claimed to be innocent of Chris's murder. Joe's mom supported him and said that actually he had an alibi. She said that if Joe would have left the home that night, he would have had to walk right past her and pass through her bedroom, and that didn't happen. But it was shown that Joe's mom was a heavy sleeper. And Joe had managed to get around her as she slept like other times. So that's kind of an irrelevant alibi, in my opinion, right? Joe was charged with first degree homicide, mayhem, and causing great bodily harm to a child for the death of Chris.
Yeah. And I'm going to go into what happened at the trial in a minute, but there were 29 names on that list. And we're not able to get any evidence or any information about potential prosecutions for any of the other 27. Here we've seen him found guilty of what he did to Thad, and he's on trial for what he did to Chris. For those 27 other people, we have no legal backing of him being charged for those. And I know we always ask if justice has been served. And I think until we figure out what happened to those other 27 names, then there is not enough justice here. Joe would plead not guilty. And again, his mom was his only alibi, but the jury found him guilty on all charges. He got a life sentence with no parole for 60 years. Clark maintains his innocence to this day of what happened to Chris Steiner. In 1998, he issued his final appeal to get his convictions overturned, citing a lack of evidence, but that appeal was turned down. And that was the same year that Joe turned 20. So here he is going to prison as a teenager, and he's now known as Joe Clark, the Bonebreaker Killer, and he is still in prison in Wisconsin. So he's doing this when he's 16, 17 years old. Do you agree that he should have been prosecuted as an adult here for what he did to these boys?
You know, I don't know what I've said over the years, but on this particular case, yeah, I think he needs to be tried as an adult. It's obvious that something was wrong with this kid in the brain and suffered from severe mental health issues. And I do not want this person to be out a free man anytime soon, because if you're capable to take someone's body and do the things that he did with it, you deserve to stay where you are. That's my thoughts.
Yeah. He's just a little bit older than us. So you put yourself in back in the mid-90s and you think about where we were and what we were doing. If somebody was doing something like this, it would have been and was absolutely shocking. I go back and forth as well. I think it's needs to be determined so much on the circumstances of whether somebody is tried as an adult or not due to the intentionality, the kidnapping, and the brutal way that he abused his victims. I absolutely think he should have been held accountable as an adult, and he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison, but that's a long time. He went to prison when he was 16, 17, and now he's going to be there for the rest of his life. So that could be up to another 80 years or so from when he was put in prison. So his entire life is going to be behind bars due to these actions. And the first thing I saw in doing my research was the list that they found. I guess they were lists headed in his room: get to now, can wait, and leg thing. So these were things like people he wanted to get to, things he wanted to do. And then when I read leg thing and I saw a picture of what had happened to Thad's legs, I knew immediately that this was going to be one of those episodes I was going to have a hard time with.
Yeah. I was thinking about the list too. Like, I just wondered, was there other kids that were tortured or hurt by Joe that we just don't know about? Maybe he didn't kill him, but hurt in some way. Like, he basically has a manifesto and two people, one dead and then one severely almost dead. Like, who else has been hurt by this kid that we just don't know about?
Yeah, I wonder. And I wonder if a lot of others were on the can wait list and he just hadn't got to them yet. If he had intentions of who he was going to try to kidnap next. And John, he walked into two houses and walked out with two kids. We don't know of any failed kidnapping attempts. So how is he so good at just sneaking in houses and taking children?
Something that I read about Chris's home was that they did find some shoe prints, but this was a pretty big house and the shoe prints were pretty contained to one area of the house. And it's speculated that Joe may have known this house before he kidnapped Chris, and they weren't friends. So it's kind of eerie to think, like, I don't know, did this kid break in before? But it seemed like he knew exactly where he was going and what he was doing.
Yeah. Going in and casing out the joint to figure out the safest or shortest route in and out of the house. And if he's going to plead insanity or no contest, which no contest is basically there's enough evidence to convict me, but the insanity plea, I think, goes out the window if you have a list that says the phrase leg thing on it. This isn't something that he could have blacked out and did. He made notes about it. He had plans to do it. He had done it before, and he was perfecting it. He had several different techniques for how to snap bones. And John, you're a big, strong dude. I fully think you could grab my foot and break my ankle, but it's going to take a lot of force, right?
I can't imagine. Yeah. I mean, the ankle, yes. Could you imagine how much or like how hard you would have to break somebody's femur, man? Like,
I can't imagine doing that without a tool of some kind.
Or like using, this is morbid, but like when I break a stick in my yard, I'll take my two hands and put the stick on my knee and do that. But I mean, as a full-grown man, I would think that even doing that to someone's femur would be hard to break. So this kid was strong.
Absolutely. And like I said, he had a plan for how to do it, which I think throws out his insanity defense or his mental disease or defect as it was listed in the Wisconsin court paperwork there. So super glad that he is in prison and is not able to hurt anybody else. And I'll go back to the fact that Thad is an absolute hero to be able to, he has the self-preservation to take care of his own injuries and to get help. But also he stopped other people from being hurt and potentially killed by surviving. If he's killed here, then Joe moves on to another victim. So He saved potentially several lives by toughing this out, including his own, and is able to get up and walk again, which I can't imagine. I've sprained my ankle and thought I was never going to walk again, let alone breaking them in four places.
Yeah. I mean, your back was hurting so bad earlier today that you had to go home and lay down.
Yeah. So probably need to go do that again soon.
Guys, speaking of laying down, I'm going to call this one done and I'm going to go. I don't take baths, but I feel like I need one after this one.
Just like I need a nap and maybe a joyful, maybe go watch a comedy. This is a tough one for us, probably a tough one to listen to. So we appreciate you all hanging out through this one. And again, just glad that Joe Clark is behind bars and that kids around him are, well, there are no kids around him, but a lot of people are safe because Thad was so tough and so focused that he was able to save himself and several others. So huge props to Thad.
All right. I'm officially done. Thad is a hero, but God, this is tough.
All right. We appreciate you guys. Again, I'll be reading those 5-star reviews as they come in. Please continue to leave them and go visit our sponsors.
Yeah. And if you need more content, maybe a little bit less rough than this, go check out Patreon. I say that when
depends on the month.
We've had some months where it's all fun and games, and we've had other months where lots of children died. So yeah. Anything from those extremes and a lot of things.
It's in like true crime roulette over there.
Yeah. So guys, go check out Patreon. We've had a lot of fans join this month and we are forever grateful. Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.